You're listening to Humanitarian Radio with your hosts, Tony St. Tone and Janie Beauclair.
Good afternoon and welcome to Humanitarian Radio. I am Janie Beauclair and I'm here with Tony St. Tone. However, he is getting ready for a fabulous interview we're having today with a gentleman named Mike Hennessy, otherwise known as Miracle Mike. Now, we're going to give Tony and Mike all the time to chat because I really feel like you guys are going to get some great inspirational, forward-thinking vibes from this guy. He has gone through quite a bit of ups and downs in his life, and he is just a beautiful representation of how you can change everything in your life and get around what people are saying about you. So without any further delay, we are going to get right into conversation with Mike Hennessy and Tony St. Tone. Take it away, guys.
So here we are today with our guest, Mike Hennessy.
He is an entrepreneur, actor, writer, and just all-around creator. He has done so many different things that I want to get right into this interview because I know there's definitely a lot of information that he wants to share with us. Hey, Mike, how are you, buddy?
Hey there, Tony. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
I am very excited to have you on the show. You know, we met at Agape through a mutual friend of ours, Ruth Kramer, and Ruth is someone that we actually met at Mount Shasta earlier this year in October, actually earlier last year. And since she has moved back to L.A., it's been great hanging out with her. And it's just she keeps introducing us to new people. And it's just been a great, great experience. So, you know, we were at your house and we got to meet you and I got to learn more about what you're all about. And I wanted to have you on the radio show and just share what you've done throughout the years with people. So why don't you just give us a little background of what you're all about?
Sure. Well, I moved out here actually in 93 from Boston. I was working on the stock market back then. And in August of 90, I was given 9 years to live with an AIDS diagnosis. So I figured if I was going to die, I might as well do it on stage. So
wow.
I started doing stand-up. Yeah, I started doing stand-up, and I started to heal myself through stand-up, and then I thought, you know what, let's take this a little further, because I, in my mind, thought I had 9 years to live, and I wanted to do it somewhere warm. And so I had a friend who lived out here, my friend Craig, and he set me up to come out here, and I was very happy to be out here, and I brought my comedy out here, and I started doing children's events. Through a friend of Craig's, and after doing it for a couple of months, I actually helped run the office where this party company was. So I worked there for a year and a half running the office and playing Aladdin 275 times, along with many superheroes and Prince Charming, all that kind of stuff, and Ninja Turtles. It was big back then as well. And then I started my own company for children, mystery shows, Mysteries by Mike. And that's what I've been doing on and off for, it'll be 20 years now, February 15th. I started in 95.
Wow. So that is a great synopsis of what you've been doing. Now, I definitely have to backtrack a bit from everything you just said, because there's definitely some questions I have for you, having said what you just said. So you were in New York. Boston. I'm sorry. I kept thinking New England because I'm from Connecticut, so I knew it was New York, yeah. Boston.
It's a mini New York. I call it a mini New York.
Yeah. So you got into comedy. So when you were diagnosed and they said, okay, you have 9 years, was comedy the first thing going like, you know what, that's it, I'm just going to go out laughing? Or did you just like say, I need to change my attitude out there and just start lightening up? And getting into something that's going to...
Actually, the comedy thing came, it was about probably a couple of weeks after I was diagnosed. I was seeing someone at the time, and he said he was okay with me being positive. And then 4 days later, he broke up with me in the middle of a mall and completely devastated me, took my heart and jumped on it about 20,000 times. And
right.
Made me feel like the most unworthy, dirtiest, disgusting human being on the planet, and broke my heart. And I actually, that night, I was at home. I lived in a six-story building. I lived on the top floor, and I was on the rooftop, and I was contemplating suicide because I was just done. I was like, I said, God, are you kidding me? I was like, I finally was comfortable being a gay man because I'm a born-again Christian minister as well, so I had that to contend with, and I finally got comfortable in my own skin. And for like a couple of months, and then I got this thrown at me that now I had 9 years to live, and I was done. And I was standing on the ledge, and I had a vision of me standing in front of people, and they were laughing, and I was talking, and I had someone behind me building the letter T for T cells, because the whole AIDS thing is based on how many T cells you have if you're healthy. So, and the person said to me, keep doing it, it's working, here's more T's for you. So I went, wow, it was very intense, and I got down, I went, I'm going to put together a stupid little comedy thing and heal myself and get better. And I put together a little routine, and I went up on a Monday night at a place called Nick's Comedy Stop. Mm-hmm. I put on a pair of sunglasses, and I went by the name of Shades. And if they like you, they'll tell you to come back in 6 months because they have a huge waiting list of people who want to perform. And at the end of it, the guy said, dude, that was absolutely hysterical. Can you come back next week? And I was like, okay. So I put together a new act for the next week, and he said it again. That was great. Can you come back again next week? So this went on for 3.5 months. I was like asked to come back every week, and I wrote a new set every week.
Wow,
now
that
comics did.
That right there is incredible because most comics don't do that. I mean, because.
No, but I didn't find that out until January. Because this was like September, October, November, December, January. And then I find out most comics use the same set for like 10 years.
Yeah.
That little thing. And I didn't know. I just kept writing. I'd read the newspaper in the morning and I'd write a new joke. And then they had me open for John Panette and a guy named Stephen Wright because my humor was very, very clean. I do all family stuff, all goofy family stuff, mm-hmm. and all the other comedians were dirty and blue. So I started opening, and then I started making money and thinking, I can make $150 to be on stage for 20 minutes?
That's awesome.
It kind of made me think, and that was like, over 20 years ago, so that was, you know, a nice little chunk of change, and then my nurse practitioner watched me do the comedy, and she, you know, I would do my T cells every month, so they went from 300 to 700 to 900, and then the final count, she said, you know, they went up again, right? And I said, yes, and she said, you have over 1140 T cells now. Because, like, the average person has, like, 1,300 to 1,400 mm-hmm. T cells in their body that are fighting their immune system. It's their immune system. It's basically a brick wall that keeps out diseases and stuff. And she looked at me, and she started crying, and she said, I want you to know that I left the church over 15 years ago, and she was a lesbian woman. And she said, but I've watched you over the last year, and your faith in God and your belief in miracles, and because of you, I've now gone back to the church. My lover and I are back in church, and we're now leaders of the gay church in Boston, and I want to thank you for that. And I looked at her, and I said, if the only reason I became HIV positive was to bring you back on your path to God, then I could die today, and I'm done. My life is complete right now. And then we cried for like 10 minutes holding each other, and you know, both of our lives were transformed in that moment.
That is awesome. That is so awesome, yeah. Dude. And you know, the fact that you used comedy to bring back your cells, your healthy cells, really says a lot, because they say that comedy is like healing. It's just, there's no two ways of doing it.
Absolutely, I stand by it 1,000%.
You know, because it brings you in a state of just euphoria. When you're laughing and you're happy, you're in a euphoric moment. I mean, they talk about that in The Secret, where the woman had breast cancer, and for 3 months, she did nothing but watch funny comedies. She didn't watch any news, didn't watch anything that was depressing, and she just laughed. And she laughed her way back to health. And most people go like, what's so funny? Because, you know, let's face it. When you're in that situation, you have a choice. You have a personal choice to make. Either I'm going to succumb to the misery of this and have everyone go, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. And then you're like, oh, God, I'm sorry, too. So now you start shrinking into that everyone's getting your pity. Or you go, nope, exactly. I'm going to fight this and we're going to laugh about it. And you're like, okay. And I thought that, I think that that in itself is just such an incredible story.
Thank you. Yeah, I just, you know, I did make the choice. I made the choice to step off the ledge, literally, figuratively, and make the choice to go in this direction and just see what happened. And it ended up, it literally changed my life. And sadly, I had friends that, I had two different friends. I had one friend that he found out he was positive, and he just said, oh, well, I'm going to die anyway, so I don't really care. And he just went and started partying, and he was gone in like a month or a month and a half. He was dead. And then I had another friend who was just like, I'm going to fight this the best I can. And he hung around as long as he could. And, you know, it'll be, you know, it was 1990, so it'll be 25 years. August will be my 25-year birthday. So I'll be positive for half of my life.
Wow.
You know, this year in August, so, you know, so I'm ready to get rid of it now. It's an unwanted squatter.
Right.
So it's been a wonderful joy and a horrific experience, and I'm ready to move on.
exactly. But you know what? I have to say that you are a great example for others that are either going through any kind of disease, you know, and disease is dis-ease, you know, and the fact that you have challenged it, if you will, within your body to say, I'm not ready yet to give up. And instead of getting mad or angry at it, I'm going to laugh you through. I'm actually going to push you through that you don't have the strength over me. And that you've been able to do this is just is awesome. So, congratulations to you for being an incredible survivor and an example for everyone else out there that if you're in a situation like this that you can overcome it. You know, it's a personal choice every day to wake
Absolutely.
Up and go, I need to laugh at this. I can't get this. This can't get the best of me. You know, and I got to say also, just going back, and I know that we're going back a bit, but the fact that you wrote as much comedy as you did, I think is probably attributed to you healing yourself because you were constantly looking for funny things. So now you're like, I'm on the prowl to find funny things. And instead of going, they want me back again, I'm going to do my same bit. I'm going to do my same bit. It's almost like you not even being naive to the fact that most people use one bit and they do it over and over again. Actually, was probably the best thing that you could have done because you changed your perspective. It's okay. This is interesting. I'm feeling like you changed your perspective on life, and purposely, like almost a comedy, set you in motion to start looking for all the humor in life. You're like,
absolutely.
Even though it's for the show. It took over everything else, you know, like, hey, I got to find funny. Everything's got to be funny.
Yep, absolutely.
So would you recommend saying, hey, listen, if you're dealing with a disease or something, try stand-up or at least start looking at life as a comedian.
Absolutely. Buy Judy Carter's book. That's what I did. I bought a book by a woman named Judy Carter. And the wonderful thing is that I got to actually study with her back in 2008. I want to say 2008. I actually got to meet her, and I told her my story. And I said, you know, I went out and bought your book, and I read it, and I started doing comedy. And she was really blown away, you know, about my whole story as well. So, and then she had a new book that just came out, so I bought her new book.
That's so cool.
Yeah. But I highly recommend it, especially, you know, because I mean, I tried it once like a couple of years before just to do it, and it was just really lame and stupid, and I wasn't good at it, and then this was literally to save my life. So I made myself good at it. I made myself really good, and still to this day, no one's ever seen my face back in Boston, because I always wore a pair of Ray-Ban sunglasses, and I went by the name of Shades, and
wow.
that was my shtick. And still to this day, nobody knows what I actually look like.
Who was that masked man? Like, I don't know. He told
exactly.
jokes.
Who was that Ray-Ban man?
That's so funny. So let's talk a little bit more about some of the other things that you are involved in. I want to just touch upon the charity that you had started prior to us talking on the air. You had mentioned it. So why don't you share that with our listeners?
Sure. Yeah. I was doing a lot of background work some years ago, and I do some once in a while, but I was doing a lot, like maybe 3 or 4 times a week. And I saw a lot of recyclables just getting recycled. And mm-hmm. I was working on the side of ER, and I was thinking, I was like, there's something missing. I felt something in my gut. I felt like there was something that was missing. And early that day, I actually dropped off a really nice note to George Clooney. And I thanked him for his inspiration, to work with AIDS and stuff like that. And I got to wave to him in his office. And so I walked outside, and I was thinking about the recycling stuff. And I walked outside, and he drove by, and he waved and said hi. And I said, hey. And then I went, holy crap. I went, I can do something about it. And I had this vision of people coming off of ramps, highway ramps, and having homeless people there looking for change, and people literally handing over their recyclables. Because they can take them and cash them in for $1, $2, whatever.
Yeah.
And I thought, holy moly. So I asked the woman, I said, could I take the recyclables from the set of ER and give them to the homeless? And she goes, oh, I'd be happy to give them to you. So I put together, it was called Extra Cans for the Needy originally. Because mm-hmm. I got a bunch of extras together to collect the recyclables and then would bring them down to Skid Row or even to a 99-cent store where there was someone homeless and offer them to them. So the bag would be worth about $10. If
right.
they sat there and put in each can one at a time, it would be $10. And we alleviate the work for them. They don't have to dig through garbage and trash and just gross stuff to get 20 cents. They would actually be handed a bag, and they could just take it down. So I worked on the set of a movie called Chuck and Larry for 2 weeks. And I was in full drag, and I went into the catering person, and it was about 400 background people, extra people. And I said to the catering person, I want all your recyclables. I want to give them all to the homeless. And they're like, wow, then go. You can have whatever you want. So I formed the actual charity while I was on that movie at a kickoff party at my home. I had about 120 people from the movie come to my home. And I kicked it off, handed out flyers, and I asked everyone, please, when you're on movie sets and TV sets, collect the recyclables, and then we'll figure out a way to get them to the homeless. And so then I started working on different TV shows, and I would say, could I have the recyclables? And they're like, oh, you're with that group, aren't you? And I go, what group? That Extra Cans for the Needy, that one can. I go, yeah, I'm the founder. And they're like, oh, my God. Your people bother me all the time for the recyclables to give to the homeless. And I was like, wow, that's so cool.
That's
so
very
then
cool.
We brought on, and it's a very simple thing. And I had people in my neighborhood started doing it. And my partner, Bob, whose birthday it is today, happy birthday, Bob, we created gold bins so the homeless people could see themselves putting their hands into gold and taking out, riches and wealth. Instead of them putting their hands into garbage. So we had a big kickoff around the Oscars at that time. This was 2007 around the Oscars, and I got to do some stuff with Leonardo DiCaprio's charity, Global Green, and we had gold bins like everywhere. And I was approached by Tony Shalhoub from Monk, who I just worked on the show, and he remembered me from the show, and he got the gold bins on the set of Monk, and we started collecting recyclables from his show, and then we got a call from Everybody Hates Chris, and they said, hey, how about Monk has gold bins for the homeless and we don't? We want gold bins for the homeless, so we brought them gold bins. And then we get a call from Nip Tuck, and they're like, hey, how come Monk and Everybody Hates Chris has gold bins and we don't have gold bins? We want gold bins for the homeless. So we had, like, 8 gold bins over at Paramount, and we were very stealthy because they already have their own, quote-unquote, recycling program. But ours, I really felt like ours did 1,000 times more to help humanity than theirs. They were just taking theirs and giving them to a recycling place.
Right.
You know, but we were actually giving hope, you know, hope in a bottle.
Oh, without a doubt. And, you know, I mean, and the fact that, you know, these things happen on a daily basis. I mean, I could just imagine how many cans and bottles of water especially, that people go through here in Southern California on a set.
Yep.
And they'll probably bring in like 20 cases of water just at the crafts table. And you're like, everyone's drinking. And just like, the bottles are just being thrown somewhere.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because on the set of Chuck and Larry, there were almost 400 of us. So we had quite a few recyclables every day.
Yeah.
And that was for 2 weeks. I did that. And the great thing about it, we were filming right downtown and right near a park where all the homeless were. So we just brought them over to the homeless. We just took the recyclables, you know, brought them right over. And Nip Tuck, probably, they donated almost like 50,000 recyclables just from that show over the course of like 3 seasons.
That's amazing. Now, did you find different people every time that to hand it to, or would you get to know, like, oh, here comes Jim again, he's, you know, waiting for it, or how did you do that?
Yeah, it was usually different people. When I lived in, because I lived in the Valley at the time, there was, the seed for the whole idea actually came from this homeless man who used to come by and go through our garbage, and he would always ask for money. And one time I kind of snapped at him and said, you know, dude, I'm in a hurry, I'm trying to get to work, leave me alone. And I was, you know, driving to work that day, and I thought, oh, my God, I just yelled at this homeless guy. Because he passed, you know, and I snapped at him. And so it was he planted the seed, because then I started this, like, about a month and a half later. He was at the press, this homeless guy was at the press conference, and all of our neighbors started giving him their recyclables, like, you know, actually having them already bagged so they didn't have to go through their trash.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah, so I mean, it really, you know, so for a while he was the one that I was giving all mine to, and then, but I also bring them down to Skid Row or go to Santa Monica or just, like I said, a 99-cent store. There's always someone out there begging for help, and I had lots of conversations with homeless people, and I did a lot of stuff with the veterans, the homeless veterans in West LA, and they would tell me, you need to ask us first if we want them, because not all of us knew the recycling thing. And so I would ask people, I would say, would you like these? And nine times out of 10, they said yes.
That's
and
awesome.
One or two people say, I don't do the recycling. What do you think I am? It's like, oh, whatever, dude. Okay, it's worth $10. If you don't want it, I can find someone else who'll take it. And this one guy, he thought it was a horrible idea when he first heard about it, and then he was running some construction sites down in San Diego, and he had 3 sites, and he goes, oh, I'll try it. So he started collecting the recyclables, and he went, and he had a truckload, like, full. He had, like, 40 bags of recyclables in his pickup truck, and he went down to Skid Row in San Diego, and he asked people if they wanted them, and he had people coming up crying, bawling their eyes out, and he said it changed his life. He was so like, oh, what a stupid idea, and then he tried it, and he watched how simple it was, and how easy, and how life-changing it was.
Unbelievable.
And it changed
yeah.
his life, and it changed 40 people's lives that were, like, hurting. They were hurting desperately, and he gave them a bag worth $10.
Well, see, and that's the thing that's so amazing, is that it's such a win-win situation, especially being on a construction site. It's like, look, guys, we're all eating, drinking, especially again, it's Southern California, so it's always hot and you always have to hydrate yourself. Yeah. So to have all the recyclables in one spot on a construction site is amazing itself, but it helps, right, helps with the cleanup and just keeping things clean. But then to be able to take that bag and see the reaction, because you're not just giving them, like you said, one or two cans, you're giving them a bag full of cans and they're going,
yep,
oh my God, you just did all the work that I normally takes me maybe, yep, two or three nights of collecting and like,
yep,
hours,
exactly,
and hours of digging to get, and you're giving it to me in one shot. And isn't that amazing? As soon as the guy saw the effect of it, then he realized this is, yep, really changing people's lives. These simple plastic bottles is helping that guy eat tonight.
Exactly. And, you know, my ultimate goal for, you know, we haven't really done as much promotion for it for a while and stuff, but we still do it. We still have our little bin, and we still do it every week. But my ultimate goal is for everyone to do it, you know, schools and businesses and homes. And I mean, I did it with a school in Glendale, and I had over 300 kids collect close to, like, 15,000 recyclables. And I went in and talked to the kids. They were sixth graders, and in return, I gave them like a big party because I own a party company. So I gave, and there's pictures of them actually on the site at onecan.org. If this picks back up, it's been down for a couple of days. But I had 300 kids, and they brought in like all these, you know, like thousands and thousands. They were knocking on their neighbors' doors and saying, "Could I have your recyclables for the homeless?" And the neighbors were like, "Oh, sure. Okay."
Yeah.
You know, and it just,
yeah,
you know, just being a little kinder, and, you know, to help these people who are in need. I mean, there are over 3 million people, 3 million homeless people, and I think at least a third of them are veterans, the ones who went out and fought for our freedom, and they come back and they had nothing.
Right.
And we're not taking very good care of them. You know, I feel like we're like the mafia. We're like, go take care of that and come back. You know what I mean? They do, yeah, our dirty work, and we're not taking as good care of them as we're supposed to.
No, we're wrong.
This is something that can help them.
We're not rewarding them. Yeah, I totally agree. And again,
exactly,
if you do ask your neighbors, or if you live in an apartment complex and ask the people that are in the apartment complex to just simply say, look, these are things that you're throwing out anyway. You're not going,
right,
home and trying to save the 5 cents. So most people...
Well, and that's the thing. That's the thing, is that we're paying $10 a month for the city to come take away the stuff in the blue bin. And then they take it, and they make the 5 cents that we already paid on that money, on those bottles and cans.
Yeah, hello.
So we're, like, losing out on the 5 cents, and we're paying $10 to the city to take it away every month.
Right.
I'm like, that doesn't seem right.
Well, you know, I know a guy who was a property manager, and he was having a major problem with people digging through one of the dumpsters, like, 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning at a particular apartment complex. And what he decided to do is he asked everyone to collect all the bottles and cans and put it in a bag on the outside so they wouldn't do that anymore.
Yep.
And that's that.
Very simple.
It's like, there they are. They're already out. Oh, excellent. They didn't have to dig through. It's like, nope, they're all right here.
We're helping you out. We're helping out our fellow man so you don't have to dig through garbage.
Right.
No one in the world is supposed to be digging through garbage. That's not the kind of world we're supposed to be living in. It needs to shift. It needs to change. And this is one simple shift that people can start doing, and they'll see their whole world start transform around them.
Yes. Excellent. Yeah. And
it's it's not a lot of work. It's not that difficult.
No, it's not. And, you know, I want to talk to you a little bit real quick why they call you Miracle Mike. Like, we know the actor Mike, we know the Mystery Mike, and how you started that.
Parties, yeah.
But you're also known as Miracle Mike. So let's talk about,
yes,
that a little.
I'd had full blown AIDS for 14 years. I was dying, like, it seemed like every 6 months. I'd lost track. But I had almost died about 13 times. And I was very proud to be Mike with AIDS. I was very proud to tell my story. You know, I'm you know, Mike, I have AIDS, and I would tell my story. I was very, very proud of it. And then I was told by my minister, Reverend Michael, who you know, Ricky Beebe, they would say, you know, stop saying you have AIDS. Stop saying you have AIDS. And then I was in my class, my acting class, with the amazing Dee Wallace, who's my mentor and friend, and I love Dee so much, my teacher. And I was taking her class, and very powerful acting class, and I was on stage, and I couldn't get, something was going on in the scene, and she was like, what the f*** is going on? What is going on with you today? And I started crying, and not on purpose, because if I need to cry in the scene, I will, but I started crying, and I said, I just want to be a great actor. And then I had a aha moment, and I went, wait a minute, I am a great actor. And then I said, wait, this translates to my healing as well. I keep saying I want to heal. I said, I am healed. I said, I'm healing right now. I'm healed. So from that day, and that was January, that was 2011, 4 years ago now, I started saying, I'm healed. And 3 months later, my T cells doubled. They had been stuck at about 140 for a number of years. So I had AIDS. I had AIDS for 14 years. And my doctor said in April of 2011, he said, you know, you don't have AIDS anymore. Your T cells doubled in the last 3 months. And I was like, huh? What? Huh? And I was like, wow. I changed my story, and I overcame AIDS. So Fox News did an interview on me, and she actually said, you know, I know you as Mystery Mike, but now you have a new name, don't you? And I said, yeah, I guess I'm Miracle Mike now. And she's like, yeah, you're Miracle Mike. And then Reverend Michael started calling me Miracle Mike because I overcame AIDS. And technically, I still have HIV, and I'm working on that this year to get rid of that, too.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't been hospitalized or dying for over 4 years now.
That is incredible.
I overcame full-blown AIDS. And everyone calls me Miracle Mike now. And if you Google Miracle Mike, you'll find me after the Headless Chicken. Because there's a freaking Headless Chicken who's had more hits than me on Google that lived for 18 months with his head cut off, and they called him Miracle Mike. So, I'm, you know, please, people, click on me so I can be the Headless Chicken. I'm tired of being outranked by the Headless Chicken from 1947.
I'm still trying to visualize that. There is a chicken without a head that lived for 18 months?
Yes, and his farmer made tons of money off of him, bringing him all over the country. He was in Colorado, and he slipped with the axe, and he got the head, but he missed a nerve. So literally, this was a chicken with his head cut off, running around for 18, 19 months, and the guy made a fortune on him, and he called him Miracle Mike. And then, he stopped breathing 18 months later and died. But he's number one on Google, and I think I'm number five.
Okay. Well, I don't think you have to chop your head off. I think your story's pretty damn good, you know? So,
yeah, exactly.
You know, I know, you know, headless chickens, they're pretty tough for competition, but...
Yeah, it's a stiff competition, I'm telling you. Yeah.
And, you know, again, it goes right back to the power of belief and what you are, what you think about, and you are what you focus on. And these are things that we bring up all the time on this show. And
yes.
You are just a living example of it. Again, going back to the laws of attraction, or going back to your power, your personal power, that, you know, this is power that you have within yourself. This isn't
exactly
someone putting their miracle hands on it. You, it's more you totally believing and saying, my body is healing. And it's funny, like, even if you have a common cold, you could say, every cell in my body is healing right now. and it's in the process of healing itself, as opposed to, I'm sick. I need to go to the doctor. Hey, man, what's going on? I'm sick. Hey, what's, you don't sound that good. Yeah, I'm sick. Next thing you know, it's like when you tell people, they just reinforce it, and then you reinforce it by saying, I'm really sick. And they say, yeah, you sound sick. And what happens is it's a vicious circle. Instead of going, yeah, I'm fighting a cold, but I'm getting better. I'm taking medicine. Mm-hmm. I'm actually healing myself. I'm actually feeling better. And now you start mentally saying that instead of going, I'm sick. So it sounds really silly in a way, but if you were to take it to heart, it works.
Yeah. I mean, it's not though. I mean, we tell our own story. We're the ones telling our story. Nobody else is telling our story for us. I've tried the blame game in the past. It doesn't work. You can't blame your parents. You know, I was molested by my uncle when I was seven. When I was seven to when I was nine, and I had an uncle that molested me 2 years. And I could blame him. I could blame the world. You know, we create our own story. You know,
right.
if we want to walk around as a victim, great. Then the world's going to view you as a victim. You know, but I'm walking around as a victor, and I've overcome, and I don't allow other people to tell my story. I've had people try to feel bad for me, and I don't allow that. I don't want pity. You know, I want you know, praise and, you know, and wonderful joy in my life, and, you know, just, you know, we create our story. So if you're having a horrible life, tell a different story. And the more you tell yourself the story, then it starts to form around you. And I am a living example of that, and I stand by that. Mm-hmm. And it's not just telling the story, but you start living it as well. So, I mean, it's, you know, eating better and making more healthy choices. And if it's money, you start looking for, you know, work. I call it play because I never work. I only play.
I like that.
Start making choices. Yeah, I mean, I never worked a day in my life. I only play. I play every day. And whether it was the stock market or, I've worked all different kinds of things. I worked in nursing homes for 6 years taking care of the elderly. I played every day. I played. If you can't play where you, quote unquote, are working, you need to find another job and stop calling it a job. You know? It's your playground. It's where you go to play.
Yeah.
If you're not having fun, you shouldn't be there. And, well, you know, and it's just, it's your choice to be there, and, you know, you need to start making healthy choices to be happy where you are in your life. And then the happiness just comes around you.
You know, it's interesting how you just change all the phrasing of things that you do for a living. And someone else I was talking to just the other day, they said they had a job, a particular job they had to do. It was some type of construction job, and they weren't crazy about it, but they had to do it at the particular time to earn a living. And they said, oh, I hate doing this. And another friend chimed in and said, well, what if you were doing that construction for God? And then would it make it better? And they're like, yeah, I guess, but he would have probably a different construction crew. And she goes, well, if God is within all of us and we're all part of God, then you are doing it for God, because that person is God and you're God. So you are doing it. And if you go even deeper, you're doing it for yourself if we're all one.
Yep.
So
absolutely.
Consider it that you're doing it for them, and somewhere down the line, someone's going to be doing something for you.
Yep.
Yeah. So,
yep.
And it's getting it, like you said, it's totally a mental state. Everything that we're talking about today really has a lot to do with your mental state. It's like you said,
where
mentally? Yeah.
And you know, you brought up The Secret, and the thing is, like, well, I saw The Secret and I saw the What the Bleep right around the same time.
Yep, so did
and
I.
Since 2006, you know Jay-Z Knight, of course, right?
Mm-hmm.
Grandpa?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love her. I got to take a course with her when she was in L.A. a few years ago. And she has an amazing DVD called Create Your Day. And it's because it was taken from she created it for the, What the Bleep. And so since August of 2006, when I found out about it, she says to start off every day, she says, when you first wake up, you don't know who you are. you have to reintegrate yourself into the world every single day. You're literally creating a new day and a new existence for yourself, and your neurons have to reconnect. So she said, the minute you wake up, before you go to the bathroom, before you pet the cat, you have to create your day. So every day, and I've been doing this literally every day since August 2006, I say three things. I say, today I will know extraordinary people. Check, I'm on the phone with you, so that's done. Then I say, today I will know great joy in a way I have never known great joy before. Check, again, I'm on the phone with you. And then I say, I switch it up, but I usually say, today I will know phenomenal abundance and success in a way I have never known phenomenal abundance and success. And I say those three things every single morning before I do anything else. And then I say, today is the greatest day of my life. I say that throughout the entire day, because today can be the greatest day of your life, or it can be the worst day of your life. You literally are the one that chooses it, and if you declare it, then you put it out to the universe, then the universe starts to create that day that you created for yourself. So every day I do meet extraordinary people. Every day I do experience great joy, and every day I do experience great success and great abundance. Every single day, without equivocation. If I forget to say those three things, I know it. I feel it. It doesn't happen. And I go, oh crap! I forgot my neuron reassessing in the morning.
Right.
And it really works.
Right, and you know, and I think again, what it is it's bringing an awareness to. What are you looking for? What are you in search of? So just like
exactly, like
you were earlier, being a comedian, going, I need new material, so I have to find funny things, even in the news, which could be horrific at time. What's the comedy in it? Where's the comedy in everyday life? Where's the comedy? And finding that, here you are starting every day saying, well, today's going to be the greatest day of my life. I don't know why. I don't need to know why. I just know that it's going to be. Right.
And it is, and it has been, and when I don't take that 20 seconds in the morning to create my day, then I just get dragged along in the day. You know, it just drags me into it. And, you know, I love her DVD. I have it on, like, my iPod, and I listen to it as often as I can. She's so brilliant, and I love and adore her, but it's all the principles of what the week. You know, and I got to, because you've seen What the Bleep, of course, right?
Yeah, yep, I did.
Yeah, and I got to work, actually it was 2 years ago, January, so it's funny, 2 years ago now, I got to work on a show called Switched at Birth, and Marley Maitland's on that show, who was in What the Bleep.
Oh, okay,
And I got to spend, like, the scenes I was in was basically with her, so I got to spend a lot of time talking to her, and we just bonded, and I told her I love What the Bleep, I told her my story, healing from AIDS, and, you know, and I was just so, you know, I was just very, very happy to be there, and her assistant, who signs for her all the time, came up, and he's like, you know, why are you so happy, Mike? Why are you so joyful? And Marley, I'll never forget it, she looks at him, and she's like, dude, he overcame AIDS. That's why he's so happy. I was like, crap. And I'm like, I love Marley Maitland. She's like my new BFF. And we talked all day. We talked all day. So blown away by my story. And then her assistant started crying right in front of me. And he said that his lover had recently passed away from AIDS. And we hugged it out, and we were all crying. It was like, we're working on this, like, TV show. We're having this deep spiritual moment.
I know, the director's going, like, what's going on over there?
Yeah, exactly. And it was like 400, 300 background going, what the hell? What's going on? And Marley and I, we just had a wonderful, wonderful time. It was one of the most magical days I've ever worked on, like, anything, like a TV movie or anything. And she's such an amazing, amazing woman, and I was so honored to meet her. And I told her what the belief, you know, it's one of the factors of changing my life and changing my story. and telling a different story, you know?
I wanted to ask you that. When do we get to see the movie that you're creating? And you're probably thinking, what movie? And I'm talking about the movie of your life. Because so far
I have a book that I'm working on right now that I've been inspired to write by Louise Hay.
So really?
I've got to study with her a couple of times, and I've gone to some of her writing workshops, and I've got to actually share my story, and I had an amazing time. I'm working on it right now. I actually am planning on doing, I want to do a one-man show by the fall about my story. But I am involved in a wonderful organization called The Lavender Effect, who you got the founder at my home.
Yes, actually, yes.
A couple of Mondays ago.
We're going to have Andy on next week. That's funny you say that. Yeah.
Oh, I love, 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 love him. He's going to be at my home in 2 days. We're talking about The Lavender Effect, and I'm going to be doing a stage show telling my story with like 4 or 5 other people with HIV and AIDS. And I'm going to be one of the 5 presenters. It's going to be during Gay Pride Weekend, and we're hoping to do it in a few different venues. But we want to educate the younger generation about HIV and AIDS. Like, I feel like an elder passing along the torch, so they know. They didn't experience the way that I did. You know, I was, you know, at the very end of the, you know, it was 1990 when I was diagnosed, and it was still a death sentence. And now it's not, but it's still not to be treated lightly, because you can still die from it.
Exactly, exactly.
It's still deadly.
I mean, they have medication to help, but it still doesn't guarantee anything.
Exactly, exactly, yeah. So I'm overjoyed. Andy is one of the most amazing people I've had the privilege of meeting in the last couple of months, and I'm so excited to be part of the Lavender Effect .org.
and I want to back up a second, because you did say your book was with Louise Hayes, and she's from Hay House, for those that...
Right, right. I got inspired to work on my book by going to her. She's had wonderful writing seminars, writing weekends.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been inspired to write my book from going to those. And so I've been, you know, been working on it, you know, from that. And then, you know, I definitely would more than likely publish it through Balboa Press, which is an extension of Hay House. I love Louise. I love, 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 love her. And I thanked her for all the work she's done, because, you know, she was one of the first few people to actually touch people with AIDS in the 80s.
Right, right.
That her and Marianne Williamson and someone else, the three of them would actually go into the hospitals and hold the people with AIDS when nobody else would. You know, not wearing masks, not wearing gloves, and just like the hayride in West Hollywood with all the people with HIV, and she would just give them hope and give them a place to come. And apparently she had like 10 people to start, and then before she knew it, she had hundreds of people coming with HIV, seeking help, and seeking direction and hope, and she gave it to them. Yeah, she's an amazing, amazing pioneer in the early days of AIDS.
Yeah, and she still is. I mean, she's done...
She still is. Oh, my God, yeah.
She's done so much.
She just inspires me so much. So, yeah, I mean, I'm working on the book, but I do have other priorities right now. Just that I'm, you know, like my dino dogs and my mystery company and acting. But the book is there, and I plan on doing a one-man show based on stuff from the book, which I would love to be out by this time next year.
Well, we'll definitely have to have you back on so you can talk about it.
Yeah, and it's called Me, Myself, and AIDS.
Me, Myself, and AIDS.
Me, Myself, and AIDS.
That's a very interesting title, and you know what? I think you're going to be able to really touch a lot of people with it, because you have such an extraordinary story to tell, and us just grazing the surface of what you've done in your life, and I think there's so many that you've inspired just by your own personal actions. And I think having a book that that spells it out for everybody as far as what you went through is really going to be encouraging and inspiring to a lot of people. So I wish you all the best for that.
Thank you. Yeah, Ruth is really, she's been guiding me with that as well. And she's just, you know, we've talked about it a number of times. And it's just, I want the book to be, I want it to be inspirational. I just don't want to tell my story, but I want people to be inspired when they read it, to know that, you know, never give up hope. You know, when there's hope, that's a jumping off point, and you go up from there. And, you know, like, again, you know, I was given 9 years to live, and that was 25 years ago. So.
That's awesome, dude. That is such an incredible statement right there. And, you know, I had a friend of mine who was told that he was going to die of cancer, and he was engaged to his wife at the time, and he had 3 months to live, and the wife's mother goes, you know, you need to break up with him. He only has 3 months to live. And she's like, no, I'm going to marry him. And the mom kept saying, listen, you don't understand. It's easier to lose a boyfriend than it is a husband. Don't marry him. And the wife kept saying, nope. And then they brought the priest in to try to convince her, and they brought all these people in to try to convince her. Long story short, she insisted, and she kept saying no. Well, do you know that he never did die? He lived. He lived and was married and continues to live bore two children and beat it, you know? So
Amen. She
never gave in, which I would bet anything on it that allowed him not to give in. And
right.
It is, you know, that power of...
That's the story of the theory of relativity, the Stephen Hawking story. It's the same thing. He was given 2 years to live, and, you know, when he was in college, and look, he's still here.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And his girlfriend at the time was like, no, I'm going to stay with you through the whole thing. And she did, you know.
That's amazing.
Until they ended it years and years and years and years later. But, you know, she didn't leave him because he had an illness. She stayed with him in spite of it. So.
Right. So what?
And that gave him hope. That gave him hope, too. So.
Well, that's exactly it. It's like, look, when I'm trying not to give up on myself now, if everyone around me gives up on me, I feel alone, but if you're pulling for me, then I need to pull for me. And then, you know, it works that way.
Right. Exactly.
How do people get a hold of you and find out what you're doing? If it's your mystery shows, your dino dogs, if they just want to talk to you, if they just want to reach out to say thank you for everything you've done,
absolutely.
How do they get a hold
of
you?
They can, I have my main site. Well, they can definitely find me on Facebook on Miracle Mike.
Okay.
And the Mysteries by Mike and Mystery Mike. And I have a website. It's I Am Miracle Mike. So it's IAMMiracleMike.com. And they can subscribe to my blog. I'm going to be blogging a lot more. If they go on there, they'll go, dude, you haven't put anything in here in a while. I will be doing a lot more because I have a lot of stuff coming up. But and on that site, it has links to my web series, The Queerbergs. It has links to my music video, The Butterfly Dance, which is about my overcoming AIDS. And it's me with 400 kids dancing. And it also has the onecan.org. It has my acting reel. So it has a lot of information on there.
Excellent. Well, I want to thank you again for being a guest today on our show. And just being who you are, I think you inspire so many. And now that we got a glance to see what you're all about, I'm sure there's going to be many people that are going to be following you and want to know more about what your next move is going to be, because your life has been a miracle, and you've been blessed to bless others, to have encouragement and to move forward in their dreams and to not give up hope. So thank you.
And you know, and I have to say that, you know, the HIV has been such a gift, because I literally have met millions of people because of it that I would never have met, including yourself and your wonderful Janie and Ruth, because I had a very comfortable job on the stock market. You know, I had a very nice life. I had a nice apartment. So it took things up and it changed my world. I got to work with Elizabeth Taylor and Tom Hanks and Adam Sandler. I've had an amazing life. It has been a great gift, and I would never have, you know, moved out here and had my life changed if I had not been blessed by what people call a curse.
Excellent. Well, it's that positive thought that keeps you moving forward and encourages everyone else to do the same. Yeah. Thanks again, Mike, for being part of the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Okay. Bye. So every week we like to dedicate a song to our guests, and this week it's Breaking All the Rules That Were Meant to Be Broken. Mike is a great example of how you can push yourself beyond your boundaries, no matter what anyone is saying around you. This is Breaking All the Rules.
Listen, you never live. Recently he did. Oh no, since she's too young. Look at what she's done. I can't say, you can't say. It's within all class reach. Oh Lord, we got to teach her. We're breaking all their rules. Breaking all their rules. Breaking all their rules now. Meant to be broken. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Breaking all their rules. Breaking all their rules. Breaking all their rules now. To be broken, yeah. They thought we never fly. Giggles through the night. Now we bounce around the moon. Amazing what the mind can do. Limitation of imagination decreases destination. They can't do this, can't do that. Oh, we're breaking all their rules. Breaking all their rules. Breaking all their rules now. Meant to be broken. Yeah, yeah, yeah. We're breaking all their rules. Breaking all their rules. Breaking all their rules now. Meant to be broken. Yeah. If I told you we are limitless, would you sit or would you run with it? Break them rules, yeah. Break them rules. Breaking all their rules, breaking all their rules, breaking all their rules now. Meant to be broken.
Hey, once again, that was Breaking All the Rules by Saint Tone. You could find that track at www.sainttone.com. That's SAINTTONE.com.
Well, that's our show for this week. I am so sure you got something great out of that. And we really want to thank Mike for joining us today and being such an inspirational beam of light for all of us. Listen, don't forget to check out our Humanitarian Radio past shows, and you can hear a variety of shows that can also help inspire you and help you to set a new course for yourself. We are on humanitarianradio.com as well as Humanitarian Radio Facebook. And while you're on the internet, check out sainttone.com, SAINTTONE.com, for some great inspirational music. Make it a good week and do something amazing for some complete stranger and watch how you can make someone's day. Bye-bye.
Humanitarian Radio, shouting out some good news for your soul.